Now, scientists have taken the first steps towards interrogating antimatter to find out more about this mysterious material. It sounds like the stuff of science fiction, but antimatter is a reality. It can be made in the laboratory, and it's even used in medical imaging during things like PET scanning. It is something of an enigma, though. The rules of physics say that there should be at least as much antimatter in the universe as there is normal matter, the matter that we're made from, but scientists can't find it, suggesting either that we've got something wrong in our basic physics, or that something else very exciting and important must be going on. The problem isn't trivial to study, though, because when antimatter and normal matter come into contact, they annihilate each other. And now, reporting in the journal Nature, scientists have made a very big step towards developing a way to measure antimatter, and this time they're using microwaves. Chris Smith spoke to CERN scientist Jeffrey Hangst.
We're working on the antimatter atom called antihydrogen, the simplest matter or antimatter atom you can imagine, which consists of an antiproton and a positron. We're at CERN in Geneva because we need the particle accelerator to produce the antiprotons, which is the nucleus of antihydrogen atom. Positrons we get from a radioactive source. We've been working for a long time to learn how to put those two things together to make antihydrogen, and that's what we'd like to study.
When you make some antihydrogen, how do you keep it in one place? Because it's not trivial to contain hydrogen in the first place. How do you keep antihydrogen, which will just annihilate if it touches anything, in something that you can study?
Yes, it's a good question. It's actually easy to contain antiprotons, which have an electric charge, and positrons, which also have an electric charge. But when you put the two together, you get a neutral atom, no charge. In order to contain that, we use very strong magnetic fields. The atom, the antiatom, has a little bit of a magnetic character. So if you put it in a very, very strong and inhomogeneous magnetic field, you can trap it. It's sort of a magnetic bottle. The problem is that in order to hold on to it and antiatom of antihydrogen, it has to be very, very cold. In our case, we can hold an atom if it's 0.5 degrees above absolute zero or less. So that's been the challenge that we only recently overcame, to hold on to these atoms once they're produced.
Is that because if you were to raise the temperature at all, then the atoms would have too much kinetic energy, they'd be moving too fast, and that would make it very difficult to hang on to them. So by cooling them down, you slow them down, and it's easier to keep them in that flask.
We actually have to produce them cold. So they're produced in the magnetic bottle, and if they're not moving too fast, they stay there. So the whole idea is to start with them cold. We can't cool them down after they're formed. You think of it as a marble rolling in a bowl. If the marble is rolling too fast, it'll go over the lip of the bowl. In our case, the marble, the antihydrogen atom, is produced inside the bowl with some velocity. If that velocity is too high, it just rolls out and annihilates. So the whole trick is to produce it cold in the first place, because we don't have any way to cool it down after it's made.
And now you know that you can make them and you can keep them in a stable state for 1,000 seconds. The question is, how do we study them?
When we do this experiment, we have on the average one atom at a time of antihydrogen. That's not a lot. You could never do an experiment with only one atom of matter at a time. So what we do now is, as I mentioned, it's this magnetic interaction that holds the atoms in the magnetic bottle. Let's go back to the bowl analogy. Think of the atom as a sort of a compass needle on a microscopic scale. If that compass needle is pointing in the correct direction with respect to this magnetic field, it wants to stay in the bowl. If you flip that little compass needle in the opposite direction, it's suddenly as if you put the marble on top of an upturned bowl, and it just wants to roll away. So what we do in this experiment is we shine some radiation, some microwaves, onto the trapped atoms. And if you get the frequency of those microwaves exactly right, it'll flip the magnetic direction of the atom. So it goes from wanting to be trapped in this magnetic bowl to wanting to roll out. And when it does roll out, it hits some matter in the walls of our device and annihilates. So we tune our microwaves, make the atom fall out, and then detect that it annihilates. We're very good at detecting that annihilation. On a microscopic scale, it releases a lot of energy, and we can see one atom.
What is that actually telling you about the structure of the antihydrogen? Are you able to do the analogous experiment with hydrogen and then say, well, look, it interacts with microwaves in exactly the same way?
Yes. So what you learn is, for example, how strong is this magnetic character of the particles that make up antihydrogen? And those are fundamental constants. We call them the spin and magnetic moment of the particles. We know very, very well the spin or the magnetic moment of the proton and of the electron, and also of the positron. It's been measured independently. What we get at with this one is the magnetic size, if you will, of the antiproton. And that's something that isn't known very well today, only to about a few parts in 1,000, where in atomic physics, a good measurement is 1 part in 10 to the 15. That's 1 with 15 zeros after it. So we're just starting to measure this type of atom. But that's the kind of precision that people have on other measurements in hydrogen. So we're looking to compare the fundamental constants that characterize antimatter and see if they're the same as the very, very well-measured one in hydrogen.
One of the other big outstanding questions is, of course, where all the antimatter has gone in the whole universe. This, if you can work out how to measure antimatter and spot it in a characteristic or fingerprint way, means that you can then turn your looking glass on the universe at large and ask that question, where is all the antimatter?
It's not clear that we'll be able to directly address that question. Suppose we do find a difference between hydrogen and antihydrogen. It may or may not point in some direction that could help us understand the evolution of the universe. Because there's no theory right now that says what such a difference might look like or how it might manifest itself in a particular measurement. So our philosophy is we have this huge puzzle. Anytime you can get your hands on some antimatter, you kind of have a moral obligation to go and look very carefully. So that's what we're doing. If there is a difference, it'll be up to some theorists to sort that out, and I'd look forward to that.
And we will look forward to hearing about it. That was CERN scientist Geoffrey Hangst talking to Chris Smith.